Our guest on this week's episode of Soundtrackin' is a composer who's been pushing sonic boundaries for 3 decades. As well as releasing numerous albums under several monikers, Matthew Herbert has also scored a diverse range of films, including 3 for Chilean director Sebastian Lelio. He now has television credits to his name too, with his latest project Temple, currently available on Sky and Now TV. As always, we'll hear plenty of Matthew's work throughout the conversation. Before that, a word from our friends Jeff and Andy, 2 ordinary fellows who were thoroughly fed up with overpriced razors. So they decided to do something about it and founded Harry's. And knowing there was only one way to reduce prices and maintain quality, Jeff and Andy bought their own factory. By taking less profit, Harry's offers great quality products for a fair price, with their top-notch quality blades almost half the price of the leading 5-blade brand. And we at Soundtrackin' have an offer for you from them, giving you a trial set for just £3.95, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover. To take advantage and get your trial set delivered to you, go to harrys.com/soundtrack right now. That's harrys.com/soundtrack for your £3.95 trial set. And Harry's products are really stylishly packaged, which means they make a great present too. And so to Matthew, who released his first album as Herbert in 1996, and we kick off with the title track, £100. Matthew, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat to us on Soundtrackin'. There's so much stuff I want to talk to you about, and one of the many things that I'm very excited that I get to talk to you about, because I've been desperate to talk to people about this film, is Gloria Bell, which we'll get to in a bit, because it's a film that I watched and I flipping loved that film for so many reasons. And I just haven't heard enough people talk about it, to be honest. It's one of those ones that I think, unfortunately, has almost slipped between the kind of cracks, and it's like, no, let's shout about it. So we will talk about it, if that's all right, because you've got this amazing relationship with Sebastian over a number of films. But it'd be great to start, because you've been making music for over 25 years now, but where and how did that journey start into making music for film and TV?
Pretty near the beginning, actually, in as much as I was at university and started towards the end of the 80s, 89, 90 sort of thing. And it was just a combination of acid house and also the sort of democratization of technology. So I'd built up a little studio that I took with me to university and things. And of course, being university, there's all sorts of people doing other things. There's filmmakers doing things.
Yeah.
And everyone wants a little studio to do something in. It's like a fun toy.
Or someone to make music for them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I actually started doing film stuff back then.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, I think you speak to a lot of people that make music, and a lot of them would like to write for film and telly. It's sort of one of those things that people, that musicians sort of want to do. And then I did quite a lot of house music and dance music and things like that in the 90s. And a friend of mine, I got to know somebody called Roberto Mello, who used to sell me dance 12s at on D'Arblay Street.
Yeah.
At Black Market Records.
Just round the corner.
Yeah, exactly. I sort of wanted to do like a God rest his soul, or like
a
sort of cross or what have you. You know what I mean? It's such a...
Those 3 streets kind of all around that area, there was just so much. You could kind of, walking down the street, you'd hear before you got to those doorways, wouldn't you, as well? It's such a shame that there's not as much of that around there as there was.
Yeah, that's right. And it was a really good time anyway. His sister worked on a film, was a film producer, and she brought on Rob to help with the music. And he said, I don't think I can do it on my own. He'd be all right with the dance bits, but some of the other bits that I think he wanted a collaborator with. So he asked me, and that was Human Traffic, and that was
amazing.
19, sort of towards the end of
99,
yeah. So we started working
years
this.
Ago.
Well, we started that in 97, so you know what I mean? We started working on that for a couple of years.
Cracking film.
It is. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but it was a better film as well. So the music director was Arthur Baker.
Yeah.
And then Arthur Baker left, or was fired, or what have you. And then Pete Tong came on, and I like Pete a lot. I think he's a nice guy, but he did try to put a lot of the latest
hits.
London record hits yeah. on it, and it sort of dated it quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, Arthur Baker put on all sorts of things like Carl Craig and more sort of undergroundy stuff. It was complicated. The director was quite young, and it was tricky. But I mean, it was a good spirit to it as well. That film, you know, it was a good spirit. And then there was sort of a middle section where I think it's called Moth. The scene was called Moth's Breakdown. It's this sort of weird thing when you write music to picture, all these titles are really weird because you just put something in as a holding pattern.
Yeah.
And then sort of 20 years later, you're still talking about Moth's Breakdown, which is a terrible name for a cue.
Yeah.
And they...
There's worse. There's worse,
yeah, there's
out there,
definitely worse, yeah. Yeah. And they said, oh, we think we need something classical here. And I said, okay, well, I can write something. I wrote a little classical thing for an orchestra, and Fiacre Trench, who's Van Morrison's musical director, mm-hmm. helped orchestrate it,
wow.
with me and stuff like that. So that was my first sort of proper orchestral session for a film, and for that one scene in Human Traffic.
Because I mean, the music that you've created, there's so much of it, and I'm not sure if you agree, but I really don't like that word experimental, because I think that what you do is quite indescribable, really. It's just you appreciate sound, and you appreciate kind of exploring how you can find sound as well, and I think that's absolutely one of the many fascinating things about you as a creative, and you don't fall into a genre as well. Do you know what I mean? Has that been something that's been deliberate for you?
I'm definitely not the sort of genre person, and I did say this the other day actually, but I'm just not very good at that sort of pastiche thing. I'm not. There's people out there that are really good at it. Also, my musical training stopped at school, really, so I didn't have university. I did drama at university, not music. So my compositional chops haven't had the formal training.
It's good with food.
Yeah. And so I'm sort of always a little bit at the edge of my ability.
I think that's good though.
Well, it is, but it can
it
be
pushes
for
you, because then you don't sit back on your laurels and become complacent with stuff. And
yeah, and I'm really, you know, I can still remember I did a musical for a French musical, you know, with a quarter of £1 million budget, and had 90-piece orchestra in Studio One at Abbey Road.
Wow.
And you're just sort of standing there listening to them play a piece of music that you sort of scribbled in your bedroom. And that wouldn't have been possible without collaboration, without orchestrators, arrangers, copyists, people to help you through that process. But you learn so much doing it, and obviously you achieve a lot at the end of it. But I think for me, it's just all about the ideas. It's all I'm interested in is like, what's the artistic principle behind the work and following it through. There's some jobs, without wanting to name names, but there are some jobs that you do more for money, because we all have to earn a living, particularly when you've got kids and mortgages and all the rest of it. But I only really want to work with people that are motivated by making the best possible work. There's so much compromise and mess in, particularly in film, because the stakes are high and it's made by committee and things like that. And, you know, it's a colossal investment. And music is just one of those things where everybody's got an opinion on as well. It's not, you know, like the producers might not really have much of an opinion about, I don't know, the costumes or something like that, but the music can really transform. And it can also mop up as well. You know, one of the instructions I had recently on a show was, we really don't believe in the central love premise of this film. And can you help us feel more romance between these two that lacked chemistry on the on the screen?
Yeah.
You're really in service to to all sorts of things, you know, to trying to help solve bigger problems that are in...
No pressure.
Yeah. And so you, in those circumstances, you only really want to work with people that are pushing for the right thing. You know, I did a film, I did a Japanese horror film recently, and the guy was really nice to me. And I think I was probably ill-suited for the job. But at one point, eventually, he said to me, Matthew, just please add cliche. You know, please just add cliches to it. Because I'd been trying to sort of do something a bit more original. Well, the brief was to make a sound that you'd never heard before, you know, like the sound of hell or whatever, like something unpleasant and unworldly. And then it was just like, actually, can we just add some cliche to it, you know?
How did you create that?
Well, he wanted like a heartbeat over the top. And actually what happens quite a lot is you give people a kit of parts. So you break the music down into different bits and then let them shape it in the in the dub or in the mix as they see fit, you know?
Yeah.
The whole thing is a constant negotiation, you know? You're negotiating with the director, and then the director's negotiating with the producer, and the producers are negotiating with the financiers, and everybody's got their own input and things like that. So it's fun, but it's not without its complications.
And every project, I imagine, is so different. You know, no two projects are the same, of the expectation of you, or the want from you, and also the experience that you have through that project as well.
Also how the roles change. You know, one thing that's really struck me this year, you know, I've just done a couple of TV series this year for the first time, and the directors are almost entirely absent because someone's telling me that the directors aren't paid to do post-production. So once they've shot it, they've normally got their next job lined up.
Wow.
Not far off. So they're not so involved in the process of making it, whereas the producers tend to oversee it in TV, whereas in film, the director is the person that you're making it with.
Is that why in the States they have the title showrunner?
There is that, yeah. They're also involved with writing showrunners, so they also get involved with writing. So it's kind of your show that you put together and oversee the whole thing, sort of like a creative producer role. So that's been interesting this year, learning about in TV how it's different, you know, how the structure is different.
Because Temple is the Sky show that is our UK version of a Norwegian show that's already exists. An amazing cast in this, and I've seen two of the episodes. I really enjoyed it. It just reminds you of how much brilliant talent we have here in the UK, like particularly with Danny and Mark. It's just kind of oh man, they're so good at everything that you see them in.
Yeah.
You say, you know, that you've done a couple of TV things the first time with this sort of episodic thing. Is that a luxury, or is it just more work? The idea that you've got, I mean, I can't remember how many episodes there are in Temple, but...
There's 8 45-minute episodes.
Is that like doing 8, it's like scoring 8 films then, or...
It is, yeah. Is it? It really is, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
And what happens as well is you've got less and less time to do it. So the first episode you have maybe 3 months to do.
Yeah.
And then the second episode comes really quickly after it in post-production, so you maybe have 3 or 4 weeks to do the second one.
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to 5 or 6, you sometimes only got 3 or 4 days to writing to delivering the thing. So it's really like it gets shorter and shorter and quicker and quicker. But is it a luxury? It's really nice if you feel like you're in control of it. It's really nice to and really satisfying to finally pull it all together at the end and to trace all the little journeys that you've been through. But because of the schedules and because there's so many people involved, and, you know, so if it's commissioned by Sky, so Sky have input as well, plus the producers, plus the director, plus often the writers are an exec on it as well. So you can sometimes get notes from five or six different people. On one show I did, there's, you know, three editors, three directors,
four
executives, plus
who'd you listen to first?
Well, that's one of the things is like trying to work out.
Who's the big cheese?
Yeah. And what can happen is that music can get moved around in places that you didn't necessarily anticipate it. And then the whole thing sort of falls apart. You know, like if you've written a love theme and then that's used for a different character, it can really throw you. So it's really about, you have to be flexible. That's one thing I'm learning more on this TV stuff. I have to be flexible about and not hold on to the sort of purity of my threads and just try and make it work on their terms. The thing I do like is creating a new language or an atmosphere, finding a combination of instruments, because you can't just put an orchestra on something if it's, you know, that's the one thing I hate about film music is that, so Gladiator, even though it's set 2,000 years in the past, would still use a Western Symphony orchestral sort of sound for it. Or if it's set in space, it's still the same orchestral setup. It seems to me really lacking in imagination about how we could use sound. So that's the really fun bit, is finding a new language for each of the things. So Temple, for example, I got a lot of the sounds on the set recorded underground, and then I commissioned a really brilliant drummer to make a drum kit out of medical equipment that we could create noises from and have sounds that it didn't have before. And I sort of create some synthesized noises from scratch to try and present a kind of, I would call it the worm, but it was this noise that indicated things weren't right or what have you. We ended up adding some little, they wanted more kind of, the thing that you get from live players is you get the more emotional aspect to it because you get humans expressing it rather than computers. Yeah. So there's a bit of that in the score as well.
conversations though when you, and at what point were you brought on where you sent a script and go, can you create the score for the series, or how did it work?
It's different every time. In this case, I worked with Liza Marshall, who's the producer on it, and she produced Life in a Day. She used to work at Ridley Scott's and production company, and I'd worked on that film. Met up with her for the first time in a while, and she brought me in quite early, so I got to see the dailies, so that's what they shoot.
Yeah.
And you just see what they shoot, the days things, and so from quite an early on I got a sense of the rhythm of the piece and things, because actually that kind of rhythm is important, like the flow of how the actors are.
It's the colours that really stood out for me as well, the kind of colour palette of it as well was really clever, I thought.
Yeah, and that really determines, you know, there's a long relationship in music between colour and keys, for example. Different keys have different colours, or they help you imagine different kind of colours. So you're sort of working that out. So the key of the piece, the sort of flow of it, the rhythm of it, the textures, is it mysterious or is it aggressive or is it subtle? You know, I always think that the music is like another character in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if that character's in the film, in the same room as the characters, is he... I say it's a he, but I don't know what kind of characters, but are they stamping in the corner going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what the fuck are you doing? Or is it sat there going like, God, I think something's not right here, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to sort of work out that part of the, you know, like how much you're going to get involved and get your sleeves rolled up and get stuck in.
Encouraged, or did you want to pay any attention to the Norwegian show? Is there any correlation between anything on that?
None at all.
Great. I haven't seen it, so I don't even know what it looks like or sounds like.
No, I started watching the first one. I mean, for example, this one's called Temple and is located very much in London, so that was something we talked about for a while, like should it have a UK sound? Do we have sounds of London bleeding in? Do we want to acknowledge that and things like that? And some of those questions or lines of discussion, they sort of fall away. But yeah, it has to be
its own thing.
It has to be its own thing, yeah.
Can we talk about working with Sebastian?
Yeah.
Across a number of films. How did you first meet and start working together?
This happens really rarely, I have to say. And if you're not in this world, you sort of imagine this happens all the time, but it really doesn't. But basically, I just had a call one day saying, this director would like to meet you or consider this film. Here's the link. He's in London next week. Can you meet? I liked the film. I went to see him. That was for a Fantastic Woman. Yeah. And then I had to deliver the finished score 3 weeks later.
What?
So from meeting him, from meeting him to actually going away, writing demos, having them approved, recording an orchestra, putting it together, mixing it, having it all signed off and delivered 3 weeks. He grew up in Chile, and in the 90s, just listened to an old record of mine called Bodily Functions that he really liked. And he was making the film and just thought, that would be good. I wonder if he does film scores, and got in touch. And actually, I'd taken a bit of a break. I really enjoyed Life in a Day, the film I made with Ridley Scott and Kevin MacDonald. Really, really enjoyed it at the beginning, and then I didn't enjoy it at the end. And I'd sort of taken a bit of a break from doing scores because I felt pretty low after it, about the whole experience. So it was really nice to then come back and do something positive like that. But it really was just a sort of a call out of the blue, you know. That's the bit that doesn't happen very often.
But then for that relationship to continue on across a number of films with Disobedience.
That's really been, I think it's been one of the highlights of my professional career, that relationship actually of just finding that person that you can work with. And he's such an incredible collaborator. I sound like one of those sort of lovers that you hear, Lon Leacon, these things like, oh, it's so good.
So wonderful.
Yeah. But actually, collaboration is incredibly hard, particularly when it comes to music. Once we'd sort of established the tone, he was really trusting and gave me space to sort of do my thing. And I think partly as well, it was so quick, the first one, that we got, you don't have time for hundreds of revisions. It just ends up being quite a kind of spontaneous vision for how the sound is. And Disobedience was a very different film. And we had a bit longer, not that much longer, only about 5 weeks as opposed to three, but...
Ages.
Yeah, a lifetime. Thank you.
such a delicate film, though, you know, in terms of, like, everything about it is kind of on a knife's edge, almost.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and it was really about... it felt like a bubble, so trying to create, like, a geodesic dome in the musically that sits over the whole thing. And Sebastian always talks about it a bit as a sci-fi film, you know, going into a community or that he didn't really know anything about and trying to sort of go exploring in the world. And it's really great to be able to continue the creative conversations that you started on one project and then bleed over into the next one. Thing that gets tiring after sort of 30 years doing it is just the constantly starting again, you know, with a new relationship, building up that process of trust, delivering and all the rest of it, just because it's so easy to head off into difficult places. I've just done a film called The Cave that just opened in Toronto, and it's a documentary set inside Syria, in a hospital run by medical students, these young women, illegally underground, during a siege for a couple of years, and it involves chemical attacks and all sorts, utterly traumatic. And the director's assumptions, the director, who I love very much and have a tremendous admiration for, you know, we had quite different ideas about the function of the music in the film. And again, I had 2.5 weeks to do the whole score for that. And it's difficult to, like, sometimes to just find the language. Also, with the music, English wasn't his first language. We're not in the same city.
Yeah.
He's an asylum seeker, so he can't travel. And, you know, he's having to go to court to testify against people that tortured him.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's really big, difficult stuff. And at the same time, trying to unpick an artistic relationship in that in a very short period of time can be challenging, and you just want to do your best work, you know what I mean? You just want to give them your best work and do something amazing. But that...
Is it coming to LFF, do you know?
It is, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's called The Cave, and it's part of their documentary series.
Going to definitely check that one out.
It's good, but it's brutal.
I bet. 2.5 weeks, so wow.
Yeah.
Do you ever say no?
That's the question my manager asks.
I need a score in 10 days. No, you can't have it. Sorry, too short. I'll do an 11.
10.5.
Yeah.
It's hard to say no when you're freelance. When you're it's very hard to say no. And also, not just this business, but everybody I know is working long hours till late, with because emails go late, working at weekends,
different parts of the world, people get in touch,
it's really I really want to start a political party that's the less party, you know, like work less, you know, travel less, just like be with your family more,
less mobile phones, less all that
mobile
stuff.
Phone,
yeah.
More sleep,
yeah,
better food.
Maybe it could be the more party rather than the less.
Yeah, maybe the more,
yeah. Less is more. Less is more party.
But maybe the Republican Party is the more party, like more guns, more pollution, money.
Yeah. Maybe the less is a better idea.
Yeah.
Before we run out of time, I've got to talk about Gloria Bell, which is this brilliant little film. I mean, I love Julianne Moore, anyway, anything she's in, I'll kind of watch. Yeah. And I didn't really know anything about the film going in to watch it. And there's a lot of music in this film. There's a lot of needle drops. I mean, I didn't realise that I knew all the words to Olivia Newton-John's Little More Love, but I do, which was, and Lady, Lady, Lady as well by Joe Esposito, is it? Frightened by a dream, you're not the only one, running like the wind, thoughts can come undone, dancing behind masks, just subtle pantomime, but images reveal whatever conversation you had with Sebastian about where you needed to provide music for this film, and how did you kind of try and navigate your way through all these kind of ridiculously brilliant and catchy pieces of, you know, known music?
Well, he sent me an email saying, as you know, I'd like to work with you, but this, the next film doesn't have any music, and it's a remake of a film that he made in Spanish, and the one in it's the Chilean version.
Oh man, I need to watch that then.
You should, it's brilliant. It's a very, it's very similar but very different. That's a really unhelpful description, but anyway. it's really worth the lead actor in it, she's absolutely brilliant, but there's no music in it. It's only diegetic music, so it's only music that's heard actually in the scenes that the character hears. And so he didn't think there was going to be any music in it, so it's quite a late addition. He's sensing a pattern here, like last minute.
Matthew's fine with 5 days to do it. It's like
and so we then had to sort of try and work it out, and we tried quite a few things actually. We tried 10 or 12 different approaches to try and make it work, and I think the thing that we finally hit on was I had this sort of vision of disco music but without the beats. So sort of synths and orchestras and sort of what's the emotional side of disco that's not just about dancing, but that's about kind of, I mean, Sebastian said, I said, she's got a disco ball in her heart. And I don't remember saying that at all. Aww. So it might have been someone else that said it. But
I want a disco ball.
But it's that kind of thing. Like, she just likes dancing. She likes dancing. She's essentially a kind of a loving, happy person. But like, what does, once you take away the beats, what are we left with a certain, it's a certain form of disco. Thank you. And then it was just a theme. And then I was in LA for something or the other. And the only flight I could get home was from Las Vegas. So I drove across the desert to Las Vegas in a hire car. And whilst I was, I wrote this, it's a very specific shape. And I was like, that was the thing for her. And it took me about 4 hours to actually get that exact thing.
Wow.
And I was staying in Caesar's Palace, which is where she stayed at in the hotel.
Yeah.
So I was like, I should stay in the hotel where she stays in the film. And then I had to check out the next day to go home. And I was in the multi-story car park and I had a couple of hours. So I set up a little recording studio with little bits in the hire car.
That's amazing. And then
tried to work it out. And then so what started as diddle-diddle-diddle became diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle. So it's just a sort of a fragmented mm-hmm. version of that, so it doesn't go continuously. Once you had that melody, then the whole sort of film kind of writes itself a little bit,
wow.
really. But this is something that for her, and the same thing happened with The Fantastic Woman, which was, we talked about quite a lot, which was giving these characters a melody, like both
like
of
Marina,
them. Are,
yeah.
Yeah, both of them are like giving them a sort of dignity, just saying, that's what I really love about Gloria Bell. My favorite cue is the opening cue. It's so massive for quite a small character, you know, she just likes dancing and sort of is on and off with
sings
a boyfriend.
Sings in her car at the top of her voice.
She gets on okay, but not that brilliantly with her kids. She sells car. She helps with car insurance. Sebastian always describes her as the woman in a film that would be the wife in the driving seat and been telling the kids to shut up and buckle in. And that would be her entire sort of role. And he sort of wanted to take her and follow her.
Mm.
And part of getting the audience to take them seriously is if you put 40 musicians in a room and play a big theme while she projects her name, and everyone sort of is like, oh, she must be worthy of our attention, you
yeah.
know?
I love that.
So it's really, there's a sort of consciousness to it that I really like as well. You know, they're consciously using the music to take people by the hand and just go, this is, come on, come with us and listen to her.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. thank you so much for your time. It's so, so fascinating chatting to you. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Sure.
And I'm really looking forward to watching the rest of Tempo as well and seeing what's next as well.
Yeah,
thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
From the score to Gloria Bell, that's Up the Stairs by Matthew Herbert, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the visionary composer. My huge thanks to Matthew for taking the time to talk to us. All episodes of Temple are available now on Sky or via their non-subscription service, Now TV. Catch up with all of our previous episodes via edithbowman.com, including my conversations with composers Alan Silvestri, Nicholas Britell and Clint Mansell. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And do check out our dedicated YouTube channel too. Next up, we had a wonderful time chatting to award-winning theatre and film director John Crowley about his new film, The Goldfinch. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.